Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Zickel, the stories-based podcast that interviews professionals, donors, and thought leaders in the field of fundraising.
Ready to transform your fundraising program? Through collaborative innovation, BWF pursues the edge of possibility, whether that means tweaking a current practice or creating an entirely new strategy at your organization. One example of where BWF provides programmatic transformation is in digital fundraising. To achieve your fundraising goals today, you're probably looking to cultivate new donors while also finding a fresh approach to engage current supporters. Because donors at all levels, including those at the major gift level, go online to get the information they seek, having a digital strategy ensures that you have a presence where they spend their time. Visit bwf.com to learn more about our digital assessments, donor journeys, lead generation and warming campaigns, donor engagement centers, and direct fundraising services.
This week, Letty Light takes the mic. She helps us continue the conversation we had last week with Matt Hutter about strategic initiatives and principal gifts. Our conversation moves from east to west coast as we go from Durham, North Carolina to Berkeley, California. Letty emphasizes that giving at the highest levels is not about the dollars, but the idea itself. She also reminds us that partnership is critical at all levels of this kind of work. Letty is the president and co-founder of SIGAP, of which Matt is also a leader. This stands for Strategic Initiatives Group for Advancement Professionals. Letty Light is a leader in higher education fundraising for transformational philanthropic partnerships, often in the form of cross-cutting, multidisciplinary initiatives. As Executive Director, Principal Gifts and Strategic Initiatives at UC Berkeley, Letty and her team partner with a wide range of academic and program leaders and work with the world's leading philanthropists to achieve their vision through partnerships with the university designed to make Berkeley's highest aspirations possible. Over the last 20 years, Letty has led philanthropic development efforts at Cornell University, UCLA, and now UC Berkeley. Now let's get started.
Hi, Letty. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Catherine. Thanks for having me. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be invited to be in the conversation with you.
Yeah, so let's talk about principal gifts and transformational giving. I don't have too many guests who work at public institutions, so I'm particularly excited to explore that angle. But let's start with context. How big is your team and what do you raise annually in commitments?
So our team is about 15, which is pretty robust. And that includes a mix of roles from frontline senior gift officers to the team leads, as well as an awesome group of colleagues that help it all go with kind of proposal writing and briefings and all the execution work. And we all work completely collaboratively across with each other to get it all done. The amount we raise each year is quite variable because of the size of the gift. So I'll say this year we're on track to raise about $600 million.
That's fabulous. And it's true. Yeah. When you're working with big gifts, it can be a night and day. You can have a, you know, a quote unquote off year, but you're working on a huge gift for the following. So as we were talking about the variability from year to year, I think it would be really helpful for listeners to understand like volume and scale. For example, how many asks do you make a year and what's the level of gift here? You know, of course, nine figure, but if you could elaborate on that.
Sure. It's historically been around 15 to maybe 25 gifts that make up our totals at the principal gift level. And that'll be true again this year. I mean, the thing about principal giving is by the time an ask is made, everybody knows it's happening, right? So I had a donor pay me the greatest compliment once where she said, Letty, you don't ever actually ask for money. And I'm like, I'm so grateful that you noticed that. there's been a long collaboration of co-design and partnership and ideation. And so By the time you're talking about the structure of a gift, you know it's likely going to happen.
I have heard that said in many iterations, that when it's done right, you know, the donor is just excited to start talking about logistics. It's mm-hmm. not this like hold your breath, make an ask moment.
Yeah. So something I say often is, for this kind of work, it's not actually about the money. It's about the idea. It's about what problem needs to be solved. It's about what gaps need to be filled. It's about, in this aspect, it's about whether money actually is the answer or if it's something else that needs to be put into place along with resources to make change. And that's where the vast majority of the awesome work is, much more so than talking about the finances of it.
Yeah, and the leadership too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Such a big part of it.
Yeah. So
I know your team has been just growing and growing every year in terms of what you're raising. And I think, I don't know, had we talked about that you were raising $1 billion a year?
So the whole campus, Berkeley, crossed that threshold in FY 20. Yes.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. And we're on track to do that again this year, which is really exciting. So our leadership team within development here, we're starting to think of, okay, long term, how do we sustain that and even grow it to say, you know, $1.5 billion a year? What do we need to do to meet that aspiration? Which is wild and incredible that we get to kind of dream that way.
Well, what do you think has worked so far to get you to your FY20 goal?
You know, I think it has to do with a variety of things. Obviously, we've touched on this, that leadership is so, so important. And we have an incredible chancellor, Carol Crist, who yields so much trust in the philanthropic community and with our volunteers and with our donors. And she's such a strong executive as well as a wonderful human being, that having that vision instead of direction of what we're trying to make possible has been really, really helpful. And it shows the kind of partnerships that are showing up and coming to the table with us. And that's also true at multiple levels. You know, we've had Julie Hooper, who is our vice chancellor of development for the campus, and she too has brought really strong leadership in transforming the organization and how we operate and making kind of one Berkeley development operation over the course of the last several years. And so, like, coming to the table with that collaborative spirit and the spirit of transparency and cooperation, and making everyone feel like they're a part of the team, has gone a very, very long way in building capacity and capability and the teams that are required for designing and co-constructing these kind of gift opportunities at this level. Every very significant principal gift has dozens of people behind it that were involved along the way. There's been a culture shift around that and an openness in creating those teams and trusting and collaborating that has made like such a significant impact in our ability to attract those kind of gifts and that kind of partnership with philanthropists.
And you had touched on the One Berkeley. Are you centralized as an organization?
We are not, no.
You are not.
In fact, Berkeley has come out of a long history of being very decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
We are now, I would call it, a hybrid model where there is central development, which is called University Development and Alumni Relations, UDAR. And each of the colleges and units, many have their own development teams as well that report to their deans or program directors. And so we now have kind of one system that we all look at. We have a model where we have somebody on campus that is charged with the care and feeding of a donor's relationship and helping to coordinate that so they can have a smoother engagement across the campus and a more coordinated one. And those are the kinds of things that have just been put in place within the last, you know, 6 years or so.
And in terms of being a public institution, I know you've worked at other kinds of schools. How is it different being public?
I think it's different for historical reasons. There's the financial model of a public institution being very different, you know, as of 30 or 50 years ago, where philanthropy itself just played a very different role in a public university environment than it may have in other private universities, where that was literally how they were established. Right now, I think there's something going on where I'm seeing some philanthropists actually choose us because we are public. And so that can actually be a benefit, you know, because of the mission of training our community here in California, and because of the deep dedication to public impact at every step of the way. And at a place like Berkeley, where we do it at scale, you know, some privates have an undergraduate population of maybe a couple of thousand. And for us, that's a single course, right? so that, you know, we have that kind of impact for students and in the research that we do, and at such a large scale, the return on investment in terms of impact can go a very, very long way.
I know that principal gifts are so personal and individualized, but if you could walk us through the general process, you know, you set your goals for the year, you kind of know, you know, where you want to go in terms of asks or your top five prospects. What is the process that you go through to get someone ready for the ask that doesn't happen? You know, that moment where they're ready to sign a proposal, what goes into that so that people can really understand this orchestration, if you will?
It's all about working with the philanthropists as whole human beings. You know, when we set goals each year, it's honestly based on looking one by one where we are in our relationships. And so that's based on years of work, even before that point, engaging. Do we think we're ready? Do we think we're on the verge of being ready? Where do we think this might go? Or we're just about there already when we're making those assessments. You know, again, when you're talking about where things might land in terms of dollars, so much work has already happened, and that's over the course of years that has happened. So backing all the way up, the first thing we do is try to understand a donor or prospective donor, and I'll say prospective partner, as a whole person. What are they motivated by? Who are their peers? What have they tried before? Who have been their partners before? What are the issues that they're trying to solve for? What are the approaches that they've taken to try to solve those issues in the world? And then we can turn to, where do we fit in the mix? Where does the academy fit into the mix? Because not all philanthropists choose universities for their partners in problem solving. Of course, we want as many as possible to, but we have to be open about that. So it's not about us, it's about them, and really understanding that. And then seeing, where can we be an effective partner in trying to solve the same issues that they are? Do we have strength there? If not, is it a matter of, if there were a certain resource, we could have strength there that could make important advances together? And then it's a matter of starting with, who do they know and who do we know, so we can have a warm introduction and start an exploration. And then it's a matter of getting to know them and them getting to know us, exposing them to as many thought partners as we have, starting a dialogue. I use this word a lot on purpose, you know, the exploration of what the possibilities are and where we could go, what the ideas are. And that's where, like I said before, a lot of the work really is like ideating. Yeah, figuring out where we click in terms of what we want to build and do together.
That was so helpful. That's such a great description, because it is amorphous, and yet there is that idea of it clicking into place is a really great image. I can see it. How many of your donors or how many of your partners are alums versus friends of Berkeley?
You know, at this level, we're seeing probably about a 50-50 split.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's one of the great benefits of being at a place like Berkeley is that you can attract the world's leading philanthropists, whatever their affiliation may be.
Is that recent?
I would say so within the last, maybe within the last five-ish years or so, that's become more and more the case.
Your vice chancellor, Julie Hooper, started about 8 years ago and created some new systems and, as you had said, you know, significant culture change. How did that help your team really do their best work and move forward with raising their sights?
So our team is actually a result of some of those changes. Our team in its current state is relatively new. I think we've been principal gifts and strategic initiatives for the last 3 or 4 years. I apologize, mm-hmm. COVID has completely obliterated my sense of time. So the history there is that Berkeley's had a principal giving team for a very long time. And in 2016, we started a new team called Strategic Initiatives. And that was a bit of an experiment, which is trying on a large scale endeavor that is beyond the traditional college or school model, but more of a topic. And so in that case, we first started with the Berkeley Brain Initiative, so around neuroscience, mm-hmm. and how to advance much needed breakthroughs in issues like neurodegeneration. And then we did that again in pursuing an initiative around genomics, which has now turned into the Innovative Genomics Institute, led by Jennifer Doudna. And there have been several other initiatives that have come on board as well, because the models seem to be working. We were starting to get higher level philanthropic engagement in ways that we hadn't before, with donors that we wouldn't have before. And then—
And these initiatives, you know, they cross several schools and programs, right?
Exactly.
But they're larger than
very multifaceted. They require multiple colleges and units to— collaborate and cooperate and invest, and they benefit faculty from all across the campus. So a few years ago, as we were readying for the public phase of our campaign, it was a recommendation that the principal gifts team and the strategic initiatives teams be merged. And that makes a lot of sense because first, the strategic initiatives, because of the magnitude of the aspiration, we kind of had to pursue a principal giving level strategy to secure the resources.
Yeah.
And of course, big science requires big resources. And so that's what was happening at the same time as our ongoing principal giving program. And so we merged the two into what we now call PGSI. We use a lot of acronyms because we have very long names here.
Not surprising. You may know I worked at Columbia for 6 years and there were many acronyms there as well.
Yeah.
And we had some similar things too. We had some strategic initiatives, fundraisers, and it is to have things so big, you know, the dollars follow the level of the idea and the volume exactly. and the magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so interesting to me to think about how opening these ideas and thinking bigger is going to be attracting higher level partners. So I'm glad that you kind of explained it in that way, because I think some people are wondering, you know, why aren't we bringing in bigger gifts? And it may just be that your ideas need to be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And in fact, we spent some time ahead of time thinking about exactly that. How do we get bigger ideas on the table? Honestly, we still are figuring out, you know, a specific quote unquote method around that, but we're doing it more and more often. But we were at a place where we really had to ask ourselves that question. And so there have been a few things tried over the years in partnership with our vice chancellor of research about kind of seeding ideas and seeing if they can grow into big ideas, or the kind of like seed funding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or there have been other attempts to set essentially a strategic plan for the campus And in that planning, there were several key areas identified for high impact research. So like energy, climate, environment, data science and AI, health and basic discovery, democracy and equality, and innovation and entrepreneurship. And so those are areas in which we continue to try to surface big ideas that we think will be compelling to big philanthropists.
So there are big ideas within schools and units. Then there are big ideas that combine schools and units. And then there are even bigger ideas that combine universities.
Yes. So
let's talk about your interinstitutional philanthropy. I mean, it's just so exciting.
Sure. You know, I think the principles are the same between the levels of pan-university and inter-institutional collaboration. So they require things like, just as much as you might cultivate a relationship with philanthropists, we must cultivate a relationship with our colleagues, particularly if they're in a different area that we don't work with very much, and really understanding that, understanding them, understanding the culture. There, you know, there are subcultures within larger cultures, and it's really important to know that and understand that and respect it and collaborate with it. And then it's also important to understand mechanisms and how they work in each of those partners' contexts. There are some things that some institutions can do that others cannot, and that shows up in the public-private space, or I will give this example. So a few years ago, we launched the Weill Neuro Hub, and that was launched in partnership with Sandy and Joan Weill, with their commitment of $106 million to Berkeley, UCSF, and University of Washington. That was one of the most awesome experiences of my career, I'll say. The Weills are among my favorite people on the planet. And one of the things I so appreciate about them is that they pushed us. They pushed us to figure it out. They pushed us to find our complementarity, to find the mechanisms of how we can equally lead this awesome institution, even though there are some things that each of the universities can do and some things that some of them can't do. Mm-hmm. And we have such a strong partnership between the three universities and so much trust there that we can do that and we can rely on that. And so we, you know, while the money sits, you know, different ways, different places, it's one set of resource and one set of leadership. There's a faculty director from every campus. The chancellor slash president from each of the universities is a part of the leadership committee, along with those faculty directors and the Weills. And it's just such a wonderfully collaborative partnership across the board. So I would say to be able to do that requires both trust and finding opportunity for complementarity versus competition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so an example of that is, you know, Berkeley is very strong in computation and AI and data science. And that's a really strong complement to, say, our partners at UCSF, which is a health sciences campus, right? And so we can find those kind of places where we can really find a strong connection. And so that's actually what led to another inter-institutional gift more recently, which is the launch of a computational precision health.
Yeah.
We have a donor who's anonymous, but they are strongly committed to both of our campuses. And again, pushed us to launch this program to figure out how to make truly 100% joint appointments of our faculty. So it's one joint program. I just launched with my partner there, Jason Sawley, who is in the same role at UCSF, a joint fundraiser position.
Oh my gosh.
Take this position forward. And that's all because we have this platform of pre-existing trust and collaboration.
Wow. So you're going to bring someone in that works for both schools.
Yeah.
That is truly innovative. I've not yet heard of any example of that.
So yeah, I don't know if any other place has done that before. We have done that before because of our Innovative Genomics Institute. That is joint between Berkeley and UCSF as well. Mm-hmm. And that was quite an experiment, because again, I don't know of any two universities that have done that, but we were able to do that. And again, we had that relationship, and we have figured out how we work together, how we communicate well, how we trust, you know, confidences, because this work requires that. But we had that, and we have that now.
That's amazing. So, you know, when I've thought about principal gifts in the past, and especially as someone who was, you know, in the annual fund or in major gifts, looking up to that role, it always looked very individual to me. And I've heard from others like Ben Porter and now you today that that's simply not the case, that, you know, there are dozens of people working on a gift at a time.
I'm so intrigued by that comment about how it looks like it's an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Or can you tell me a little bit more about
I think things have changed a lot in the last 5 years within principal gifts in general. I think it's very much evolving, but this sense of secrecy, like, well, that's happening over there with the president, with the VP, we'll find out about it when it's closed, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. That I think that is becoming more old fashioned, but that was the way I saw it, the way I've seen it before.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually something that we have had to change very significantly in order to build trust across the campus with the deans and their teams. So to go back to your question about what it takes, when you think about creating what is likely a new endeavor with a lot of resource that will impact a large swath of people, you know, faculty, students, and the people that have to administer it all, it requires a lot of expertise. No one person or few people knows enough to be able to design something like that very well. And so that's why it requires, you know, getting the expertise of the finance people and the academics and a range of disciplines who know what the incentives are, who knows what the scientific needs and gaps are, talking to facilities people about, you know, what can actually be promised, you know, where people are actually going to be and do this work. Sometimes that involves, you know, architects and, you know, capital planning, depending on what it is and what the outcomes are going to be. And then, you know, even within the development team, it requires writers and gift planners and the people who are working directly with the donor, or people who are working with their teams, or the people who are working with the president or chancellor. It takes a lot to be able to both design, communicate, and then execute these kinds of philanthropic investments very well.
It's funny you said architecture, because since we've been talking today, I've just been envisioning this almost as architecture, putting together the baseboards. And so that's another interesting metaphor in terms of thinking about it. This has just been so interesting. You know, thank you for sharing about your work and the way you view things. I would love to ask you to fill in the blank.
Okay.
Innovation is?
Innovation is collaborative, big dreaming.
And what is some advice about innovation that we should all know, you know, based on your lived experience, especially on this team, and how should we be warned as well?
I think one of my biggest lessons learned through a mistake that I made, in order to innovate, you need to know what's already happened, right? And so I think taking the time to understand context and history is a really important and necessary first step. So that you, A, aren't reinventing things, aren't repeating failures, aren't taking credit from others who've already been there and done that, are, and I'll put these in the affirmative, that you can understand what's actually necessary from that innovation, what's going to be valuable and meaningful, and that it's not just you. There's no innovation in the world that is important that came from a singular person going by themselves. Yeah. So, you know, what is that proverb? If you want to go fast, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together.
I love that one.
Yeah. So understanding context and building teams is, I think, which are essential for innovation.
And Letty, what do you know for sure?
I know for sure that the world can and does get better. And that's what we do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So it really is all about partnership, collaborating with others, listening to donors, and thinking in new ways to make our dreams bigger than we could have imagined before. Please connect with me on Instagram at devdebrief and on LinkedIn. I would love to hear from you, and I'd love to hear ways that you're innovating in your own work. Thanks again to BWF for sponsoring this exciting and special season. See you next week.